Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, he has returned, Jack Piattelli. What's up, man?
Things are good.
I'm all smiley this morning. I don't know why. I saw you come in and I was like, ah, there he is.
Yeah, I missed you. It was, 3 weeks since I last saw you?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
That's the perfect, I feel like it's the perfect time for you. You can reload all your insults and your jabs and you're ready to go and you can take me down however you want to do it.
Well, I had a great weekend. I went to a high school game on Friday night, went to a pro game on Saturday night, and then I went to a college game on Sunday. So I saw a lot of lacrosse at a lot of different levels. But the one thing I want to talk about, our next guest I'd like to get his back on. The one thing I don't like about the shot clock, if you ask anybody about the shot clock, right?
Yep.
They love the shot clock. But my understanding was 80 seconds, goalie makes a save, you get 20 seconds to go to midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you win the faceoff, mm-hmm. and your offensive end, the shot clock starts at 80. I think it should start at 60. And the other thing is, if you're on offense, right?
Yep.
And you lose possession in your zone, and then you get the ball back, instead of going to 60 seconds, it goes to 80. I still think it should be at 60. I just think it makes the game a faster game, gives the other team more of a competitive, not an advantage, but makes the playing field maybe even if you don't have a great face-off guy. And I'm looking at it from a neutral perspective.
You are, by the way, you're far from neutral. I don't buy that.
Okay.
I don't think you're very neutral. I think you're saying like from neutral people. That makes sense. But we should ask our guest.
Yes.
His opinion. We have
a great guest.
Lemoyne head coach Dan Sheehan, who has coached at Lemoyne for 26 years. Is your 26th year?
That's correct.
That's wild.
6 national champions.
That's what they tell me.
Fantastic. That's impressive.
What's your take on Jack's theory about the shot clock?
Yeah, I guess from a coach's perspective, what we're asking our officials to do, I think anytime we can ask them to maybe do less, from my perspective, would probably be better, so that they can spend more time in the game rather than the aerobics that we sometimes see out there. Yeah, that, and then maybe we have a 2-year rule cycle, but it seems like just when you start to get comfortable with something, it changes. So I think I'd probably be more of a proponent for getting rid of the face off.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you're one of those coaches.
Jack, what you're saying is you mentioned the face off in your conversation with the shot clock.
Yes.
I think it the exciting part of the game is the getting up and down and the constant, if you're watching it on TV, the constant head swivel one end to the other. If you're watching it in person, just the nonstop action.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know what I love? And I'm sure you do too. I mean, players are actually riding now. They're riding, and it makes the game more exciting. The turnovers and being able to get that ball back, as you only have 20 seconds to get it over midfield. I think that's the best part of the shot clock, is the riding came back. That's the biggest part of the game. I mean, you knew Mikey Powell because he grew up in your area, Dan. He told me once that his most important part of the game, most exciting part of the game, favorite part of the game, riding.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually fun if you're good at it. Like, unless you see a lot of attackmen that are like swinging wild, but if you are an attackman that maybe you're a converted midi or you grew up playing midi, because I feel like everybody, when they start playing lacrosse, they play midfield. Like, my girlfriend has a son, he's 7 years old, and he's like, I want to be a face-offer. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to play midfield first. And like, he just started playing, and I'm cycling through new players in my program, and they're like, coach, where should I play? I'm like, you're all midfielders until I tell you you're not. Because that's how you learn. I think it's how you learn the game the best, because you're on the field the most in and making decisions on both sides of the ball. So you learn how difficult something is versus and your skill set to apply against that thing in the game. I feel like it's the best tool to learn is to play at that kind of level.
Right? Well, and I'm not sure there's too many college coaches out there that wouldn't put lacrosse IQ as number 1, 2, and 3 on the priority list when you're recruiting.
Right. It's interesting, coach. You're the first coach that have said, when we ask him about recruiting, what's the most important thing in recruiting a player? Is it skills? Is it athleticism? Is it IQ? You're the first one that said IQ, IQ, and IQ.
Yeah.
Honestly, but if you don't have IQ, you can be the fastest guy, the most skilled guy, and you you could be useless out there.
Yeah, it definitely has an opportunity to catch up with you pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, I covered pro lacrosse for a very long time, and one of the things that people will get mad at me for is I'd be like, this guy just throws the ball away all the time. And they're like, oh, he has all these sick highlights and he makes all these goals. And I'm just like, yeah, but he has more turnovers than he has points. So like,
yeah.
Why can't we quantify that? Why can't we qualify that when we talk about this greater thing that we're covering, right? And that's the same thing for college lacrosse in a lot of ways too, because I feel like college lacrosse is, I mean, Coach, I'm sure you dislike highlight culture as much as everyone else. Like, I hate it. I have kids come in, especially now that I'm coaching again, they come in like, Coach, can we try this? I'm like, no, we can't try that. That is you doing five spins and trying to dunk a ball. No.
Watching Dan's son Ryan play at Cornell, you can know he's a coach's son because he's fundamentally sound.
Mm-hmm.
He's athletic. He's an athlete, but he understands the game.
Yeah.
And he's got both parts, athletic, good skills, and just understands the game very, very well.
Yeah. Well, the statistic of 16% of the time, you're one of six guys on O, six on D, plus your goalie. You know, that 16% of the time, you're either covering the ball or you have the ball in your... If somebody said, hey, you got a 16 out of 100 on a test, that wouldn't be very good. But if you can play the other 84% without the ball on your stick or playing off-ball defense, and you tell somebody, hey, listen, I got an 84 on the test, like, you might be able to live with that. So, yeah, to that IQ piece of not always being the biggest, strongest, fastest guy out there. And I gotta kind of have that mentality when we're not even in the race when it comes to your top attackman. There's no five stars on our roster, at least from an athletic standpoint. I don't know that we have anybody on our roster that can shoot the ball 100 miles an hour, but you get a guy that shoots overhand consistently and knows when to bounce it, you know, that guy can survive.
Yeah, I was talking actually with a former college soccer player this weekend, and we were talking about how the thing that really separates players that get recruited and people that just play sports is IQ. The other part of IQ is spatial awareness. Where are you in relation to your teammates, your opponents, and the ball? And I feel like truly good and truly great players at the next level and all levels have spatial awareness as one of their number one characteristics to separate them as like, oh, he's good. He knows where to go. Exactly what you're talking about, Coach, when he doesn't have the ball and he knows when to run off for a sub. He knows when to come on. He knows when to be in. Honestly, like even off the field, you have to know when to be in line to go on. You need to know what unit you're on. You need to know what offense you're running. If you don't know those things, if you can't pay attention to those things, your impact in the game is so low that you're basically a replacement player. Like you can just grab a pylon and throw it in there. Like you need to have that active ability to make plays on and off the ball.
Coach?
Yeah, no, I 100%. Yeah. Anytime that you can get somebody other than your man to think about whether he needs to help with you or not, that's huge. I mean, I grew up in a high school environment. There was no box coach. There was no one that told you to get on the field. There was no one that told you to get on the field and stay on sides. You paid attention and you always entered the field in the defensive half, turned around, see if there were three guys behind you. And if there were, then you ran an offense. So,
but that's the best way to learn the game. It's like when we were kids, we went to the playground and you played run the bases or you played stickball or you played tennis and you learned the rules as you went along. You had to figure it out on your own and you just became smarter because you became more aware of what was going on in your surroundings because you had no choice. You had to. You don't have anybody just telling you, go yeah. here, go there, go there. I don't like coaches who, you know, I'd like to get your opinion on this, but I don't like coaches that coach on the field constantly telling the players what to do, when to go, dodge, pass, shoot, because that's what practice is for. Your thoughts on that, Coach?
Yeah, that I'm not sure I'm in 100% agreement with you.
That's fine. We can disagree.
I consider myself a guy with a pretty high lacrosse IQ. And
yes.
And sometimes I'd say the ability to see things before they happen. And it's also knowing your players.
Right.
I think today's day and age, kids look in the mirror and they see Michael Jordan. Now I'm dating myself, but You know, they see Michael Jordan staring back at them. And that's not always the case. And sometimes they need those reminders. There's something to be said for that one more guy. Right. Hey, one more.
Right. So,
yeah, the whole show is built on disagreement, Coach. Don't worry about it. we love conflict. I think I was talking to Jack before we started recording about how you guys are doing this year. I've watched two of your better games, two of your bigger tests in Mercy and you. And you played both in a different style, which was interesting to me because the Mercy game is very much, they have a ton of athletes. They have big guys. They have a lot of dudes. And they kind of try to control the middle of the field, which is something that you guys do very well as well. And because of that, the game was very close. And the opposite, but something different happened in the U-Indy game where you guys went up and you kind of had to hold them down and prevent them from coming all the way back. You held one of their top scorers in check, Drew Billig, who's one of my favorite players in D2. One of the things that Lemoyne always does well is defense. And they always have a guy ready to go. And the thing that separates them is because everybody can have a guy ready to go, right? Everyone's got a slide. Lemoyne always has the two. And I remember that because I coached, I shouldn't even bring this up this early in the podcast, but I coached against you twice. And the first time was in 2005 when I was the assistant at Franklin Pierce. And the second time was in 2006 when I was the assistant at St. A's. You want to guess how many goals my team scored in those two games, Jack?
No, 10.
One.
Wow.
We got wrecked. And it's because
were you the offensive coordinator?
I was not. Okay. I was mostly the box coach. For Pierce, I had a lot of, I did everything, but it was very pushed in. We didn't have a lot of assistants. At St. A's was very opposite. It was Jerry had like four or five assistants and I was the box guy. But I remember for Pierce, I was like, okay, we need to bang this and get a shot here. And the kid looks at me and he's like, I can't shoot from there. I'm like, what do you mean you can't shoot from there? He's like, the guy's already on me. I'm like, then you need to move. You know, move your feet. I can't tell you how many times I've screamed, move my feet in my life. Probably like 1,000, right? And he's just like, Coach, I can't go anywhere. He's just on me. I can't do anything. I'm like, it was very frustrating, but he was right because you have so many guys that are keyed in to what you're trying to do. And that's one of the things that I think, personally, one of the things that I think makes you so successful as a coach is like, when he puts a guy on the field, that guy knows what he has to do. There's no questions. There's no like, Coach, what if I did this? You know what I mean? He's like, no, you're doing this. And you always have great assistants as well. You're always so put together. And honestly, they're one of the most feared teams, I think, not only in the NE10, but in D2.
Coach, talk a little bit about your season. You're 6-0. You had a couple of close games. You got to be happy with the wins. Are you pleased with the way the team has played and the direction it's headed so far?
Yeah, I think we got a good group. I don't know how many times over the past 26 years we've been the more talented team, but I think in a lot of cases we're the better team. And I think this is a group that has that potential, you know, moving forward as we approach April and May is not too far away. So yeah, I'm happy with our group. We still have an awful lot to learn. We've got some young guys that just need more and more experience in every single game. They're able to put those in their pocket and bring it to practice the next day and hopefully continue to build on that.
Looking at your roster, you've got over 30 players from New York, but it's interesting. You've got New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Florida, Oregon, New Jersey, all represented, but a majority of your players are from New York. And majority of them are from the area. So you recruit a lot of your players from your area, and you've obviously had a lot of success doing so.
Yeah, I've been fortunate over the last, a stretch of maybe 10 years where my own children were playing. So not only are you looking at things through the lens of a coach, but you know, you also have an opportunity to go to some games that if you didn't have anyone in a jersey, you probably wouldn't go to it. So the opportunity to maybe find some hidden gems, or I think in our case here, to be able to watch a kid, not just with your flip-flops on in a chair for a half of a 40-minute summer league game, but, you know, to see a kid play six times with his high school team when there's their scheme and they're asked to do certain things, I think that's that's truly an unbelievable evaluation. And I've been fortunate enough over the last, like I said, with my boys playing in high school to really know the talent around here in upstate New York.
Couldn't emphasize that more. Just watching college lacrosse over the years, the experience on the field game time is so important. I mean, you can't talk about it enough, because unless you're playing in a game situation, it's completely different than just practicing every day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think you do have to be pretty good at practice. You know?
Sure.
You get to the next level and you're probably going to practice 140 times during the course of the year and play 14, 15 games. So yeah, you certainly need to be good at practice for sure.
Well, I know when you mentioned Lemoyne in this area, New England area, people think lacrosse. But talk a little bit about the school and what kind of programs they offer educational wise.
Yeah, so one of the things that's probably the most frustrating that pops up all the time when you talk about Lemoyne College is this idea of a hidden gem. We're really not interested in being hidden. Absolutely fantastic school academically. We're probably about 70% of our roster is in the Madden School of Business here at Lemoyne. I can tell you that this year being an example, our graduating seniors last year, they're still part of the COVID extra year of eligibility, but I had the pleasure of telling probably four or five kids, like, hey, listen, you are not coming back. You are going to sit down with your parents and figure out which one of these four job offers making more money than I wish that I made currently. You've got an opportunity to start your career off. You've got a ring, hopefully on the mantle at home. Go start your life. Move on, because I'm not sure that these opportunities are going to be there if you were to stay another year. So yeah, fantastic school in Syracuse. It's not New York City, but it's a college town. We're about a mile and a half from Syracuse University. Fall is fun when everybody from LSU to Notre Dame to Florida State comes to town. Syracuse basketball, when you get 30,000 people in the Carrier Dome to watch a basketball game. And then right here on our own campus, when you're one of 18 kids in your freshman writing class, that's not so bad itself.
Yeah, I think also the talent level in upstate New York, we talk about hotbeds all the time and everyone's just like, Maryland versus Long Island. It's like, upstate New York is where you want to go if you want to get a tough kid who's going to listen. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if I'm looking for that and I'm a college coach, that's what I want.
And a tough kid that can play in the wintertime now, right? It's
right,
become a winter sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, I remember going to tournaments, and I'm not going to say which coach this was that I worked with, but he would see a kid wearing sweats and he would just cross him off.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, sweats. He's the only one on his team wearing sweats. Done. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. That's what we're doing. But that was actually at the Tully Shootout that happened. So, which is one of the better, it's like high school, like, style tournament in that area with all the best programs from different divisions playing against each other. It's pretty great. It's a great showcase.
72 degrees this year.
Oh, wow. Was it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's incredible. If I was coaching college, I would go there. I mean, I know there's a lot of college coaches there anyway, but like you can snag a nice hidden gem there before they get a ton of national attention. Coach, I know you're not always using the transfer portal that much, but you've got two guys on your team that are both from D1 schools. Your netminder, Jack, help me say this. Because it's an Italian.
Vavanese.
Is that what it is, Coach?
Vavanese.
Ah, it was either that. And then I got another one for you. He went to Canisius. And I got another one. Let me just pull it
up.
We
like
here.
To pronounce the vowel at the end sometimes.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you for
help,
man.
So I got stuck on that one.
And the other one is Joey Pezzamenti. Pezzamenti?
Pezzamenti, yeah.
Pezzamenti.
There we go. Yeah, and they are, one's a goalie, one's an attackman, and they're having excellent seasons. How did you kind of, I know you've brought some guys in before, right? But these guys are true, full-on impact guys, starters for you. How do you integrate them into your team?
Yeah, well, first of all, you mentioned it. We're not huge transfer portal guys. We consider ourselves a program that we're going to graduate our best players every year. I think that's the way that it's supposed to work. And it's, I don't know how some schools do it when you're sitting there and, man, you're hoping that the right guy at the right position with the right strong hand enters the portal, and then is interested in coming to your area of the country to study a grad program that you hopefully have. As a coach, I think I am a control freak, and there's just way too many variables in that scenario. So what we do is, with the understanding that we're graduating our best players every year, is we've got to make sure that we've got the next guy in our pipeline. And I think with these two guys, it's a little bit of an interesting story. First, with Matt. Matt grew up, if I golfed, I could possibly hit CBA high school from my office with a golf ball. So knowing Matt was friends with an awful lot of guys on our team growing, kind of kept, we scrimmaged Canisius a couple of times. So we knew who he was as a player, but more importantly, like, we knew who he was as a person. So when he had an opportunity for an extra year in his decision, because I think he was same scenario, trying to figure out if he really wanted to delay life one more year or not. But he took a chance, because we don't tell anybody, hey, listen, it's your job. We tell everybody that we'll give him an opportunity to win the job. So yeah, so Matt took a chance, and you know what I love about Matt is his energy level that he brings to the team. He made a comment, and this is his quote, not mine. One day in practice in the fall, we kind of had a little heart to heart, like as a group, our defense, and said, hey, listen, let's get some things out on the table, and this is what we need to do going forward. Matt stood up in front of the group and said, guys, I've never played on a winning team, so I think his vulnerability kind of was super attractive to all of us. And yeah, he's been great. And then my buddy Joey Pez. So as I mentioned, my boys, I've watched Joey Pez. I've coached Joey Pez. I've yelled at Joey Pez since he was probably 10 years old, playing club with my son Ryan. So not only that, Joey's lucky that his mom and dad, I absolutely love them. So always looking to add to the tailgate with some good people. And so Joey was a pretty good get for us.
Makes a lot of sense bringing those players onto your program because you knew them personally. And that's what scares the heck out of you and a lot of coaches with this portal is, could be the best player in the world, but how is he in the culture, and is he a good teammate? And what you don't want to find out later that he doesn't fit into your program.
Yeah. Well, and just our style of play, we may ask our best defender to cover a crease. You look at our stats right now, and I don't ever look at them. I don't look at them at halftime. I know our guys, and I know what they can do. But I guarantee you, we've got six guys with probably two or three goal difference between one through six. So this is a place that requires a great deal of selflessness to play in our program.
Share the ball.
Yeah, I will tell you a stat that's impressive. You are third currently. I don't think this factor in your last game, but you are third in scoring defense, which I know should make you smile, but you probably want to be number one. I know you as a defensive coach, and it, like, honestly, like, you talk about being a very high IQ coach. Listen, being on the other sideline, it is like he knew exactly what to do to shut down the Pierce team. Was like, we're not a threat to beat you, right? Like, we're not. That team was very put together at the last minute. There was a coaching change. There was a lot of stuff going on at that time. And he still knew every kid that was good. And he knew every single way to stop each guy. And you could see it. He just point, move. Because you're not really like a stalking the sideline guy. I feel like you're always in it, right? Like, you're just kind of like, I'm here. I'm going to tell you what to do. And then we're running the huddle, right?
Well, I think that goes back to my high school days when at West Cheney, we convinced ourselves, and I think it was 99.9% accurate, that you're going to see your best competition in practice. And in game days are fun. Game days are the payday for all the hard work that you put in. So I think one of the backbones of our program is our scout guys. It's not just carrying the bucket of balls out to practice. Like, younger guys in our program, like, you earn your stripes by being part of our scout team. And I can't remember a week where our scout guys didn't absolutely do everything that we asked them to do. I mean, we've asked goalies to put righty goalies to play left-handed in practice, and they do it without question for the greater good. So yeah, I think it is kind of who we are and how we do things.
So talk a little bit about the scout team and how it all works for our listeners. I know they will play against the offensive team, the defense, the other team you're playing and so forth. But do they watch film and go through that whole routine as well?
100%. Well, if it's a week between games, we typically worry about ourselves for the first couple of days. But typically on Tuesday is when we introduce who's going to be what number. And we do ask them to do a little bit of homework so that when they show up for practice on Wednesday, they've got a little bit of an idea of what they got going on. And it's a huge, huge developmental piece for us. Sure. If the other team is got a righty midfielder that's really good change of direction and it's got just some ridiculous speed, we may ask a lefty midfielder on our roster who's got really good speed to be a righty in the week. And by the end of that week, you know, that freshman left-handed midfielder now even one step closer to being a right left as a sophomore on somebody else's scout.
Right.
So that's that player development piece of it too.
Coach, can you talk a little bit more about how you've built this culture at Lemoyne? Because your only two losing seasons were your first two. So, you know, all the way back in 1998 and 1999. So can you just kind of, was it a lot of your high school influence? Was it other coaches? Like, who are some of the guys that influenced how you built this team up?
Now, you played at Ithaca, Jeff Long, and he had a great culture back then, continues to have a great culture.
Absolutely. Long man. Love him. Love him. Yeah, growing up in Camillus, it didn't matter if you were short, tall, fat, skinny, right-handed, left-handed. I think from the day that you signed up at Shove Park, you were tested. They would ask you, didn't really happen, but it kind of happens. They would ask you, hey, what-handed are you? Mm-hmm. And you never, ever, ever bit on that answer.
Love
hey, what-handed are you? Coach, I'm both.
I love it.
And I think that's kind of an example of going forward. And even today, watching Division I lacrosse, like bigger, stronger, faster, like it's there. It's just not here. So we had to pick and choose our battles. I'm from a recruiting perspective, I'm never one to shy away. Probably the worst thing that could happen on the recruiting trail is a club coach, a high school coach telling me that a kid I ask him about is a Division I player. And my comment is, yes, I am aware of that. That's why I am asking about him.
Sure.
So, but I consider ourselves to be like that NFL team that has five fifth round picks.
And always have something to prove, right, Coach?
Yeah.
You know, get a little chip on your shoulder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think as it's been mentioned with our roster being we've got several guys from upstate, from Central New York, from Section 3. It was those guys are gritty and you can coach them. You talk about tough. We watched film the other day and it was, hey guys, like, this has nothing to do with the game on Saturday. This has everything to do with the day you walk across the stage. And I want your boss to send me an email, give me a call and tell me what a great job I did with you. Like, that's the ultimate compliment. I'm lucky enough to be sitting in an office here. There's quite a bit of hardware, but preparing these guys for that, I really want to make their first boss be the happiest guy that he hired this kid. So that's probably been my main goal here over the last probably 10 years.
Well, it's tough to build a championship team, and you've done it a number of times, but you know, playing in a championship game is a great experience that I never played in. And our son's got a chance to play in the Division I national championship. And I can't imagine what it's like to play in that game. And you've coached in many of them. But to come out of that team last year, the Cornell team and your championship teams, but they were really a great group of kids and they were a great team. And they would do anything for their teammates. And my oldest son, I hate to bring up my son, but he said last year that the reason why we made it to the championship game, even though they came up a little short, is because of every single player in that locker room, the scout team. And they would do anything for anyone. One guy goes down, the next guy comes up. Everybody's rooting for each other. And that's what you've done. You've built the culture, but it makes them better when they get out of school because they understand how to work with people and they know how to surround themselves with good people. That's it.
Yeah, 100%. And as a dad and having the pleasure of being a dad, but at the same time, it's really hard to take that coach hat off. Talking about Cornell, there's a kid, number 9, Billy Chabot. He puts on about 3 miles every game, and he doesn't step foot across the white line. And he is just constantly tapping guys on the head, getting the bench to get going. And I think it's a guy like that that just so invaluable and a huge opportunity for me as a dad from a professional development standpoint to see what goes on down there in Ithaca, because obviously they got something special.
Yeah, no question. So, Coach, when you recruit a player, what's the process like? And I'm sure you're involved and your assistant coaches are involved, but can you just talk a little bit about your recruiting process, how you find prospects? I'm sure you have a prospect day, but everybody recruits a little bit differently. And obviously, how many kids do you bring in every year might vary from year to year based on your needs.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I'm in a category of I love my wife. I like hanging out with her. I love my kids. I like being with them. And as I get older, I used to be able to juggle like 15 balls at a time. And now I'm just like, man, I don't enjoy juggling 15 balls at a time. So I think at any one given time, I'm recruiting max 7 guys. And we'll go through the process. We're trying to find the right guys, not the 10 best, not the 10 first,
right.
not the 10 that want to be the quickest to get up on Twitter and Instagram and, right. and all that stuff. We are looking for the right guys. And 7 might even be high. So we go through the process. Really important that you spend time with me. I would say that I would be retired probably several years ago if I got a dollar for every tour I gave at Lemoyne College.
Impressive.
That was my opportunity to figure out, honestly, if I liked you as a person, if I liked the possibility of running into your parents after the game at the tailgate. Super selfish, super gatekeeper. Like this program, like we're not letting just anybody have access to this. Not to mention when all of a sudden one of my kids is in the locker room. So now the potential of you being invited to my son's wedding, like we are playing gatekeeper. Right. And it's worked for us. It's worked for us.
That's a great point. Invited to your son's wedding. I was going to ask you, what's it like coaching your son?
My wife thinks it's way better than I do. she thinks that we just like hang out every day.
Right.
Yeah. She, oh, did you talk to Kevin today? Yeah. I talked to Kevin today. Well, what'd you say? Well, I told him to pull his head out of his ass today. That's what I told him. So yeah, no, I'm really fortunate. He, his lacrosse IQ is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
He's 5'0". 100 and nothing pounds, but with him on the, I'm not sure we've ever lost an end line with him on the field. He's the guy that will get the ball to the backside guy a second quicker so that hands-free shot has 1 yard further to follow through. So yeah, it's an easy task with Kevin.
Well, with Kevin, he grew up with the game, understands the game. I guess you looked at your son is a prospective player to come in and help the program, but you knew he was a high IQ guy. He'd be a good team guy, even though he was your son, because we've had a number of sons over the years play for their dads and it just doesn't work out. You knew he would fit in and he was good with it, right? I mean, he wanted to come and join your program and play for dad.
Yeah. He's the only son that he and I would be able to work together, but that's another story, maybe another show. Yeah, no. And you know what, with Kevin, I just told you that I recruit about 7 guys at a time. I didn't recruit Kevin. I turned that one over to the staff and nice. Said, here you go. Figure it out. If it's meant to be, it'll be. If not, send them packing. It's a short ride home.
Good call on that one, Coach. I like that.
Coach, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the expansion and kind of the rise of the NE10 as a conference in general. I mean, you guys have kind of been the figurehead, the old guard for such a long time. And now you have teams that, you know, I literally coached someone who used to beat 15-0, 18-1. And now, like, I feel like the growth of the sport has kind of trickled over into Division II and specifically the NE10, because the NE10, as we've had other coaches on here that coached the NE10, and it is, you know, a gauntlet. It's one of the most daunting conferences in the entire country, and you guys are a big reason for that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it, the growth of the game. I mean, you mentioned our roster. I got a kid from Portland, Oregon on my team. Like, how the hell does that happen? By the way, how that happened, he played it in Lake Placid.
Right.
So I don't, my recruiting budget isn't that big. It's I think a compliment to the coaches that we have in the Northeast. It's a compliment to the schools in the Northeast 10. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that lacrosse coaches were part-time.
Right.
Yeah.
And now full-time, and the ability to get out on the road and recruit. And then the transfer portal. Quite honestly, there's kids that live in New Hampshire that went to school in Virginia and have an opportunity to get a graduate degree while living at home, saving some money, getting ready to tackle the world. And I also think with COVID, and there's an awful lot of schools that didn't graduate their best players. And those kids, because they had such a great experience and entrenched in the campus community and in the locker room, guys that they just didn't want to leave. So I think that certainly has added to the depth that we now have here in the Northeast 10.
I can't let you go without asking you this question. It's been a rumor for, I don't know, 6 years that Lemoyne is going to go Division I and follow that path. I literally just got a message. I'm not even going to say where I got it from, someone in the know that said that 2025 is kind of the date that's targeted. Can you shed any light on that or want to talk about it at all?
Yeah, I that probably falls under the category. If you read it on the internet, it's true, right?
Yeah.
I work on the internet. Something has to be true.
It's true.
Yeah. No one here at Lemoyne College has told me anything about that.
Okay.
I think with the landscape of college athletics, I don't know if anybody watched the 60 Minutes interview last night with Charles Barkley, but you want an unfiltered perspective on what's going on in college athletics right now? It's crazy. And I don't think that it can continue. At least it can't continue for schools outside of the 30 biggest schools that there are. So I think Lemoyne College, to their credit, is in a constant process to make sure that we are spending every single dollar the right way, that we are providing our student athletes with the best experience possible. And no different than what I do as a coach. We got a game tomorrow, but I'm worried. I got three games ahead of us that we've already started working on the scouting report. So the last thing you want to do is be caught in a situation where you're just not prepared for. So I think that's what Lemoyne is doing now. They did it 3 years ago. They did it 6 years ago, making sure that if there's a change on the mound, we're prepared for it.
Coach, do you think there should be any restrictions with the portal?
What I love about the portal is who's not in the portal. I think as the head coach of the Lemoyne College men's lacrosse team, I think it's my job to create an environment that kids don't want to leave.
Right.
So, yeah, because we're not heavy in it, because there's not a line outside my door, at least today, of guys that want to go in it.
Right.
We've been really, really, really fortunate that everything from the school's administration to our locker room, the kids want to stay here.
Yeah, you've done a great job, obviously, Coach. I don't have to tell you that. And last question I have for you. Do you get the Cornell schedule, spring schedule, before you actually make your schedule so you can go see your son Ryan play and watch Kevin play for you? Is that what you did? Because I've seen you at a lot of games this year. I give you a lot of credit. You did some good planning.
So I was very appreciative. I wish I had connections at ESPNU to get that game the other day switched from Saturday to Sunday. But there's an awful lot of things to go in it. The one simple thing that I don't think a lot of people think about, well, two things. Number one, we played early neutral site games. Facilities are more available on Sundays than they are on Saturdays. And our friends in Stripes, the pool of availability on a Sunday tends to be a little more plentiful than it does on a Saturday.
Yes. Good job.
It's one of those things that as a coach, it's one of the bad things that goes along with the thousand good things is, and what's not talked about is I got a daughter that's a freshman in college and playing college lacrosse. So we're
you're busy.
It's almost mid season. So we just made the call to the tire shop. We need a new set already. So
yeah.
My wife's a trooper. Yeah.
I know. I can imagine all the driving. But hey, I really, really enjoyed talking to you, Coach. Really a great pleasure having you on the show and appreciate the time very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Yeah, Coach, I can't wait to never see you on a sideline again on the other side.
Good luck the rest of the way, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks awesome. A lot.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.